Good evening, everyone. Hi, this is Trish England, and welcome to Race Talk with Trish, produced by Dave Wallen and the Racing History Project. Did you know all our shows are recorded and you can listen to them anytime you like on Racing History Project's website? That's www.racinghistoryproject.com, and also new on the internet, an archive called archive.org. We've got a really special event tonight. Let me find it. Previously on Race Talk, we've highlighted a surprising number of drivers who've maintained career-long friendships that have defined their decades on the track. Burt Greenwood and Rick Mancuso, Price Cobb and Rob Dyson, Mook and Busby, Binks and Kendall, Terry Earwood, and just about everybody. Tonight it's Jack Baldwin and Joe Vardy. The two hot rod boys grew up across the river from each other in Tampa, drag racing whatever they had and exploring the possibilities in motorsport. Joe was already established in the pro classes at an early age. They met at a local race shop one day in 1974 and began comparing notes. Jack had a growing interest in sports cars. Joe snagged a Gremlin, and eventually they both wound up in the Champion Spark Plug Challenge in IMSA. Each of them pursued other racing interests, series, and classes, but their paths crossed continuously. Even now, they're still in the business of racing. Joe gets more seat time, but Jack occasionally escapes on two-wheeled adventures when he can find time away from his duties as race director for SRO here in the States. So, sit back and enjoy another round of stories from Jack and Joe. Welcome, you guys. So nice to have you here, and it's nice to have an audience with listening.
Hey,
thanks,
Trish.
Much.
How you want to start this thing? What was it like in Tampa in the early 70s when you were getting to go racing?
What do you think, Joe? We were just a couple of hot rodders, you know?
Well, yeah, just tell her. Tell her how to have them.
Oh,
well, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I always knew what I wanted to do. I always wanted to be a race car driver. Don't know where that came from. Never could figure that one out. But that's what I always wanted to do. So, you know, I always had my eye on that, and I was always trying to accomplish that. And, you know, growing up, I was racing my bicycle, I was racing everything, and then obviously, you know, became a teenager, got my license, and when I got my license, then the whole thing took off. My dad owned a driving school, and so I guess those were the first cars I raced.
Did he know about it?
No, he didn't know about it. I was really good at sneaking the car out the back door and, you know, out the back alley, and I was real good about that, you know.
What,
and
were they like Novas and stuff or what?
Yeah, they were like my dad had Plymouths and Chrysler products and things like that, you know. And so, you know, if it had a motor and four wheels, I mean, I wanted to drive it, you know. My sister would take me to summer camp when I was a little kid, and I would, you know, I would drive the car to summer camp, stuff like that. I was, you know, hooked at a very early age. So, you know, and then you get, you know, you get to be a teenager, you know, and back in those days you could work on cars. So I didn't have any money. I don't think either one of us had any money. Joe didn't have any money either. None of us had any money. Joe was the one that went in the military. And, but, you know, I didn't go in the military. I beat it with the lottery. And so, you know, I just was a hot rod crazy kid. You know, I was a hot rodder. I was a drag racer, street racer. You know, we had three drag strips in town. And on the weekends, that's where I went. And, you know, and just drove whatever I could get my hands into. Most of the time, it was somebody else's dad's car because they had faster cars than I had, you know, than my dad had. So, you know, so that's how I started out. And, you know, sneaking my dad's car and saying, Dad, can I borrow the car tonight? Sure. And I'd take the hubcaps off and go straight to the drag strip and, you know, run it in like N stock or something. Whatever class that car would run, I'd run it. So it's pretty primitive, but that's how it worked. You know?
Yeah, run what you brung.
Run what you brung, you know. And, you know, I'd have to, and I won the little trophies and stuff, and I'd, you know, I have to hide them.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what did you do with
it's, like, it's like, where'd you get that, you know? So, and then, you know, one thing led to another, and then as you progress, and I transferred to Gainesville. I went to Miami Junior College, Miami-Dade, and then I transferred to Gainesville and the Gainesville Drag Strip, and interesting enough, Terry Earwood was the track manager.
That's right.
So that's when I met Terry Earwood. And I was one of the first people to ever drive to the gate at Gainesville Dragway. Bolaz was there. I remember that day. And Terry was, obviously, he was there. And so they had, you know, the strip was 5,000 feet long, and the return roads are a little banked. They're just a little banked. And I found myself racing, and I'd go into the turn, I'd go through the bank turn, and I was like, I'd want to come off the corner, stay on the throttle, and do another lap. So
that wasn't the idea on that place.
And then that got me kind of hooked. And then, to be honest, the way it all started with me in road racing, and Jody can tell his story, I don't want to talk all the time, but I went to, there was a guy in town called Garbage Charlie Keene, Garbage Charlie. And they were running one of those Camaros, Furman Oldsmobile. Joey, you probably remember that guy's name, Bo Costanza. And anyway, they were running one of those Camaros, like the Sunoco Camaro, at Sebring. And they asked me to come down and be on the crew. And this was like 1968, so I did. And that one of those evenings, and we were in that building with the Penske car and the Shelby, you know, the Mustangs, and Carol Shelby was there. Later we got to know Carol, Joe and I, with the Dodge program. But when Charlie was taking the car out to do a practice in the middle of the night, he'd run up and down and, you know, check the cars out. He said, "Hey, you want to go?" And I stopped, and I jumped in the car. And
yeah.
I mean, it was just sitting on the floorboard, and he gave me a ride, and that was all it took. That was it right there. I said, like, because I always thought that drag racing was really fast, and the road racing cars were fun, and they were great, but they were slow. They went fast, but they didn't accelerate because they weren't drag cars. And I was really wrong about that. And when I found out how fast some damn things were, I just, like, that's what I want to do right there. So that's where I got the bug for road racing, at Sebring in like 68. I'd already been there before as a spectator. I'd been there in like 66, 65, 66, you know, I was in high school. And I went to Sebring, and, you know, my dad's Barracuda, and we'd sleep in the back of it, and, you know, out there in the dirt, right out there at the hairpin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was how, for me, that's how it all started. And then Joey, how did it start for you, bud?
Pretty much the same way, you know. I started racing motorcycles at the drag strip, and then I got some rides on some bigger bikes, and then ended up driving people's cars at the drag strip, and that's how that worked. So I just got rides at the drag strip and drove other people's cars.
That's what, you know, it's other people's cars, because we couldn't afford our own cars. Our dads didn't have fast cars or anything like that. So, but we could drive, right, Joe? That was the deal right there. We could drive.
Well, when did you get around to telling your folks what you were doing?
You know, I never really told them. I think it's more like they caught me.
You didn't become John Winter overnight, huh?
No, I mean, they sort of caught me. So, you know, and then it was one of those deals where, you know, I forbid you to go to the drag strip, and that didn't work either. So, yeah, it it kind of went downhill for a while, you know. But they wanted me to be a banker or something. I don't know what they wanted me to be, but I wasn't interested in that. And they, you know, then years later, they're reading my name in the paper all the time. So that, and then they started figuring out that I actually was going to do this, you know. So.
And not only that, you were good at it.
And I was pretty good at it, you know.
You could make money at it.
Yeah, I was actually pretty good at it. I mean, I was a good, you know, I was just, I was good at doing what I was doing. You know, Joey and I didn't have any money, so we had to figure it out. So that's what we did, figure it out. And I think it still works that way today unless you can, you know, write the check. You have to figure out how to, you know, put the deal together.
Yeah, and that came later. Okay, Joe, how did you manage to go into the military and drag race too?
Well, I was drag racing, and then I got drafted and ended up going to the military. I got back a couple years later and just started drag racing again. Met a couple guys that were pro drag racing and started working on their cars. And one day, one of the guys that I was working on his car asked me if I wanted to go to Pomona to the Winter Nationals in California.
Whoa.
And I just came home and told my dad that, hey, listen, I'm going to California. And he thought I was kidding. And and my mother thought I was kidding, too. And then here comes this truck with this car in the back, and I'm throwing a bunch of clothes in a suitcase. And my mother and my mother runs up to my father in his bedroom, and I hear it. And he goes, he's really going to California.
Talk some sense into that boy.
Yeah. So he comes in my room, and he says, well, your mother says, make sure you call when you get there. And that was it. Went to Pomona.
Nobody was crying and all that. Okay.
Joe, so who did you go with? Was that Glenn? Did you go with Glenn?
No, that was Rusty Gillis.
Russell, with who?
Yeah,
Russell Mendes?
Gillis. No, Rusty Gillis.
Oh, Rusty. I remember Rusty Gillis. I remember that.
Yeah.
He had a Mustang.
Mustang super stock car.
Yep, exactly. Because when I worked on Felix's, when I worked on, what is it? Remember Felix Alvarez? Remember when, what's his name, had the pro stock cars, the Sox and Martin cars? Remember that guy?
Pomeroy.
Yes, Pomeroy. So I worked on those cars, and we would travel around the Southeast running that circuit, you know, running the pro circuit, running all outlaw stuff, do whatever we were doing, you know, running the NHRA stuff, or going to drag strips, and Rusty would run with us.
Yep.
Rusty would run with us in that Mustang. You know, we all had the ramp trucks and all that kind of stuff, and
I worked on his car.
I'll be damned.
And then I drove. Then he bought another car from Ford. That was a road race, a drag car from Ford, and I got to drive it for the first time because I was driving local stuff. And then I got seen at a drag strip, and I got hired by a guy, and ended up driving pro stock. Ended up in 1974 running pro stock. So that was it.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And then y'all met.
We met, I think we met, Joey, didn't we meet over at Dino's on Del Mabry?
No.
Didn't we?
No, I think we met
or
at
Glenn's. Or was it Glenn's? It was at Glenn's that day.
We met at Glenn's. Yeah.
And you had that.
You were riding motorcycles with him, and you guys were going out to Croom or something. And you were over at the shop, and then I guess I met you there, and then we'd see each other at Steak and Shake and all that stuff. And I guess
you had that gremlin out there. You had a gremlin. You were like, I remember you, there was a, at one point you had a gremlin out there. You were going to get around with that. That was later, probably.
You'd already gone Formula Ford racing by then.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
tell them about Tell them about your Formula Ford experience.
Yeah, please do.
What? Which one?
Well, you won a few championships.
Jack won the United States Formula Ford Championship and got a free ride in Europe in Formula Fords. Tell them about that, Jack.
Yeah, so Formula Fords, how I got into Formula Fords, first I had my brother's Cortina, and that's kind of an interesting story to set this thing up. So I wanted to go road race, like sports car racing, but I was like, what car? I need a car to do this, and I'm thinking about it. And there was a guy in Clearwater that I can't remember the guy's name for a long time, but he had a shop and he worked on Cortinas and things like that. He had a little, he was a big deal with SCCA and all this thing. So I called him up and I said, let me ask you, how about a Cortina? And he said, yeah, Cortina makes a great car. It's a little it's a B sedan. It's a good little race car. And I was like, my brother had one. And my brother was going to school, Jimmy. And he was going to school and he had a Cortina GT and it was like gold, like a street color car, like gold. And he had wrecked it. Like he wrecked everything. But he wrecked it. But he didn't wreck it that hard. And it was out of Bill Curry Ford. It was at the body shop. So I called him up and I said, have you painted that thing yet? And they said, no. I said, okay, don't put the interior in it. Paint it hugger orange, put a black hood on it. I swear, on the phone.
Something.
And they were like, okay. Hugger orange was the orange of the Z28 in those years.
Right.
They did it. And they didn't, so we went to pick the car up, and here's the car with no interior in it. It was like this, we bring it home. Mom comes out there. Oh, my goodness. So what are you going to do? We're going. So we would, and Glenn Blakely built the sway bar for it, and we put Connie shocks on it, and we hopped up the motor and all this stuff. And then we started, that's how we won every race. I mean, we were winning races and, we went to the regional and then the national and all this stuff. The first place we went was Savannah, like in 1968. And so we're doing that. And the car got wrecked at Daytona. Guy behind me lost his brakes and crashed the car. And that was the end of that. So then I'm home one night, and a buddy of mine, Jim Forsman, who I still know to this day, calls me up and says, hey, Jack, he says, this guy I loaned to, he was like an entrepreneur guy and lived in Gainesville. And so he called me up and he said, I loaned this guy some money, and I took this car for collateral. And he can't pay me back, so he's going to give me this car. It's a race car. You want to drive it? I go, yeah. What is it? He says, well, I don't even know what it is. I said, well, where is it? He said, it's in Washington, D.C.
Oh, great.
So I got in my car. I went to Gainesville, drove up to Gainesville. He gave me $200. And I went with a little piece of paper, and with an address. He says, here's where the car is. Go get it. Okay. So me and my buddy Ray Brooks, Joe, Ray, and we get in I had a Cutlass at the time, a 67 Cutlass. We drive up to Washington, D.C. We find this warehouse. We open the door, and here's a red March Formula Ford sitting on a brand-new trailer.
Flat. Oh, good grief.
I'm sitting there. I was like, what is that?
Whatever it is, I like it. Yeah.
So I bring this thing home, and now I'm racing Formula Fords. And I had not a clue what I was doing, but I just would drive it. And we won. I won just about, every race I raced with it. And then I ended up getting up here to Atlanta. I came up here to Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta because I rode Atlanta in 1970 or 69. It was like the second race Road Atlanta had. And I was up here, and I was in the paddock. And at the time, Bobby Rinsler was a big deal. Rinsler Motor Racing. And he had a Can-Am car. He had that L&M car, you know, or the Royal Crown car. George Farmer drove for him some. And, I mean, it was one of those Porsches. And so his shop was at Peachtree DeKalb Airport. So, anyway, he was out at the track. And, you know, Bobby's over there in his Winnebago. You know, back in those days, he had a little, like, a 24-foot Winnebago. It was the only one in the paddock. And he calls me over, and he says, who does your motors? And I looked at him. I was looking over my shoulder. I said, me? You know, I do everything. I mean, there's my deal right there. And he says, you're pretty good. You could be a race car driver. I said, well, that's actually my plan. And he said, well, you should move to Atlanta. So anyway, I moved to Atlanta. I lived in the basement of his partner's house basement. And put my car over there in Peachtree DeKalb at that shop, and went on and won some more races, and ran the runoffs a couple of times, and they had this race in 1972. They wanted to choose a U.S. team to send to the World Championships at Brands Hatch, and every country, the big countries, had three people, and the smaller countries had two as their team. So, and that's how it all went. And so I was driving at the time for a guy named Jack Miller. And Jack Miller was a guy who owned a Formula Ford, and he called me up one night. I moved to Atlanta. I'm up there, and the guy calls me up, and he goes, and he had a real hard accent. He says, Jack, this is Jack Miller. Jack, you know, I'm looking for a driver. You know, and so one thing led to another, and I'm driving Jack Miller's car, and he's a superintendent for a big company that put up buildings, steel buildings, Mississippi Valley Erection Company, iron worker. So I go to work, you know, I go to work for Jack Miller. I'm walking high steel now. I mean, I'm just walking high steel, and that's what I was doing. I was an iron worker, and during the day, because it paid a lot of money. And at night I'd work on the race car and won a bunch of races in it. It was a March Formula Ford, and then they had that race, and so we went up there, and I remember I went up there, and the night before I went up there, I had nobody going with me, nobody, and I remember my dad. I called my dad. I said, you know, I said, I think I can win that race, but I need a motor. And so my dad did help me. I said, if you buy me this motor, I'm going to win this race, and then I'll sell the motor and give you money back to you. And so that's what I did. And I was hoping he would not take me on that complete deal. I was hoping he would leave me with the motor, but he didn't. But anyway, so I went up there. I went up the night before the race. I had nobody going with me. This guy called me, and he says, who's going with you? I said, nobody. He says, you want me to go? I said, sure. So he got in the van, and, you know, on the way up there, I read the book, that Jackie Stewart book, what's it called, Winning?
Mm-hmm.
I read the book and listened to Elton John. And I pulled into the racetrack up there, Wentzville, Missouri. I was the first guy there. Come down dirt road, and here I'm there. Back in those days, you could just unload and run. You know, they go, yeah, be careful. So I'm out there, and I'm checking things out. And guess who the second guy rolling up in was? Bruce McGinnis.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. And he was and so that was a race where when I go back and look at the list of drivers, what they did is they invited all the national champions, all the current points leaders, anybody that was anybody in Formula Ford got the invitation. And everybody, they came to Wentzville, Missouri, because it was kind of in the middle of the country. And that's where we did this race. And I won it. I put it on. I was on the front row. I think I was on the pole. And but we had this classic lap after lap race, Bruce and I. The whole thing was Bruce and I. And we had this classic race. Lap after lap, passing, you know, back and forth, wheel to wheel. And on the last lap, I was leading going into turn one, and that wasn't good. because I knew I was set up. And I went down into one of the turns, and I went high on purpose. And Bruce took the bait, and he went under me. And now I'm behind Bruce. And I knew at that point, I said, you know, I know Bruce just knew that he screwed up right now. So anyway, it was a classic deal where on the last lap, the just like you dream about, you know, the draft, the pass, and I won by, you know, I don't know, half a car length. And it was unbelievable. And that's, you know, that's what got me that championship. Bruce, we went over there. We didn't do that great because we were Americans and they didn't want us to do well. But we were there, and we showed them what we had, and came back. And, you know, Bruce went to work for Skip Barber, and he's been working for Skip Barber ever since.
Wow.
And I went on to be, you know, whatever the career I had, and that's my little Formula Ford thing. And I drove Formula Fords for a few more years. I drove for a guy named Joe Armbruster. You know, just did what you can. And then after that, I became then the first instructor for I went to work for Road Atlanta and so on and so forth. But I don't want to spend all this time talking. Joe, you got to get in there with some stuff. We did some cool stuff, Joe. Late in Firehawk. In Champion Spark Plug. Meanwhile, you were doing all that stuff because you were racing in California. You had that Mazda. You had, you know, you were building that whole thing going on, you know? Because
yeah,
I was watching you on TV. I was watching you on TV.
We had a pretty good time. Yeah. We got really lucky.
Well, back in those days, you know, Joe, I think what you were very good with cars. You still are. You're really smart about that stuff. You know, you had a knack for that, and you were a really good driver in those years. So, you know, you did well, but, you know, your cars were always good. You know, you had an ability to figure that stuff out with those cars, and you've always been, I mean, when it comes to those production style cars like that level of, I mean, there's nobody better. I mean, you're the best there ever has been in that group of cars. I mean, and you've proved it over and over again. I mean, how many races have you won or been a part of championships? Like over 100 probably, right?
A couple for sure.
Couple. The last I looked, it was like 76 or something like that. That was years ago. And you won a bunch of stuff since then. I'm talking as a driver. You won as a driver. You won a lot of races. A lot.
Well, I had to do that to eat.
Well, we understand that. Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and you had the shop, and you had the shop in Brooksville. You had that shop, and you're running all those Camaros, working your ass off.
Hey, Joe, tell us a story of how you got together with Jim Busby.
Well, that friend of mine that me and Jack met at his shop, his name was Glenn Blakely. We were drag racing, and he had a jet car that he had built for a guy.
Russell Mendes.
Unfortunately, he got killed at Gainesville in 1973, I think, 72 or 73. And we were...
The free spirit.
Yeah. And we got... and his wife kind of tasked me and Glenn to get rid of the equipment. He had a truck and trailer, and we put it on the National Dragster, which is a magazine, a drag magazine, and you put things you want to sell on that and everything. And this guy calls from California and says he wants to buy the truck, wants to buy the trailer. And so we sold him the trailer, and then he said, can you deliver it? And so his widow asked us if me and Glenn would take it to California and deliver it, and it was to Jim Busby's shop. So we went to Jim Busby's shop, dropped the trailer off, took the hitch out of the truck, And then me and Glenn proceeded to go to these aircraft salvage places, which we were pretty excited to go to. You know, you can buy AN fittings and hoses and everything for just salvage prices. So we loaded up a bunch of that stuff. And then he said, Glenn said, have you ever been to Las Vegas? And I said, no. He said, well, it'd be a shame not to go to Las Vegas coming all the way out here. So we went to Las Vegas, and on the way to Las Vegas, we see our trailer on the side of the road with a truck connected to it with the hood up. So we pulled over and see if we could do anything. Lo and behold, the transmission is a brand-new truck. Transmission went out. It was a Sunday, and the truck and trailer was on the way to Mid-Ohio for a Camel GT race. And Jim Sitt asked us, hey, listen, can I hire you guys to take the rig to Mid-Ohio? I don't have time. You know, if they take the truck to the shop, I won't make the race. So the hitch holes and everything were in the back of the truck anyway. So we unbolted the hitch, put it right through the holes that were there on the truck that we brought it there, tied it up, and we drove straight from there to Mid-Ohio, and that's the first road race I ever went to. And I got hooked on it, went to work for him with Glenn, and worked for him for about a year. And then I thought, you know, I was doing the Camel GT thing with him, working on the cars. And I saw that class that they had, the Champion Spark Plug Challenge, and I said, I bet I could build one of those. So I went back home. Glenn let me use his fab shop. He stayed in California with Busby. Went back to Glenn's shop in Tampa, and I had some friends that used to sponsor me on my drag car. I told them what I wanted to do, and they all threw a little money in, and I built my first road race car there, and it was a Gremlin, and went to my first Champion Spark Plug race.
Man, I love it. And I need to take a break here. Welcome to Race Talk with Trish, produced by Dave Wowen and the Racing History Project. All our shows are recorded, and you can listen to them anytime you like on the Racing History Project website, www.racinghistoryproject.com, and new also on the Internet Archive, archive.org. Okay. Chapter 2.
Well, let me tell a story about Joe Verde.
Okay.
Here we were at Sears Point, 1982. I had a really good RX-3. Unfortunately, I wasn't much of a driver. And we're batting on it, trying to make it work better. Sears was kind of a difficult track for me anyway. So Joe jumped in my car, put in about 5 degrees of negative camber on one side, and went out and broke the lap record. I think he was sitting on the pole in his car. And I think it works all right. So I motored around in 10th place while he went on to win in his old car. But he was unquestionably a hell of a driver and probably still is. I think Jeff Klein or somebody commented on the fact that Joe was probably faster than the guys whose race team he's now running. But you don't want to tell them that because you lose your job. But anyway, glad to have you here, Joe. You're a fast guy.
That was a while back.
Yeah, now, Joe, tell them about the, this little stories. I mean, you did a lot with the Mazdas, and then you got into the Mazdas, and that was kind of exciting, those years. You won a bunch of races with those cars. Then you won a bunch of races with the Camaros, and then the Porsches. But before that, the Dodges. When did the Dodges, remember the front-wheel drive cars, was that after that or before that? When did we do that?
Yeah, the Dodges, I had the RX-3 SP that I drove in 1981. I ran one of them, and I was at Road Atlanta. I think it was 1982, Road Atlanta. And I met Dick Maxwell there. He came to... I was up along the fence watching the Camel GT cars run, and Dick Maxwell came up to me and he asked me if I would be interested in working for Dodge and running one of their front-wheel drive cars. They wanted to promote their front-wheel drive cars. And would I do that for them? So I thought the guy was nuts, and I didn't even believe him. He gave me a business card, and it said, you know, direct connection, you know, Chrysler Racing. And I gave him a call when I got back home, and I went up to Detroit, and we struck a deal, and we started I built a couple of these Dodge Chargers in 82 and 83. We built a Shelby Charger because Carroll Shelby got involved with putting his name on the cars. In 83, we won them a championship, and that worked out pretty well. And that was, they wanted me to put a second car on because we were leading the championship, and we wanted to have a jammer car. So I built another car, and I said, well, the only guy I know that can drive these things is Jack. So I called Jack up and said, hey, he want to drive with me. And that's what we did.
And I was driving. I was actually working for Joe that year. Joe, do you remember the day you called me? This is a cool story. So I'm in Atlanta, and I'm in the T-shirt business. That's a whole nother story in the rock and roll business. I was trying to sponsor myself and all that stuff. And I was in my office one day, and Joe calls, and Joe says, what are you doing? That's what he always does. He always says, what are you doing? I said, I'm just sitting here in my office. He says, you want to go to Mid-Ohio? I go, no, not really. For what? And he goes, well, I got this Dodge. He says, I got this Chrysler, this New Yorker. You know, I'm like... And I said, you know, I got this New Yorker. We'll go up to Mid Ohio. I'll come by and pick you up. I go, what the hell? How'd you get a New Yorker? He goes, you know that Dodge deal we talked about? He said, I got that Dodge deal. And he says, I got to go to Mid Ohio. We got to get this thing going. He said, Jack, you got to go with me. You got to help me figure this out. I got to do this program. So he literally came by, picked me up, and I got in the car, and we went to Mid-Ohio, and the rest was history. We had that shop out there off of, West Shore, whatever it was, out there.
John's Road.
John's Road, yep. We had that shop. We had that truck called Agony. Oh, geez.
Every time we'd go somewhere, it'd break down, so we named it Agony.
Yeah, every time. And then we had this, so talking about stories, like it reminded me when you said that story earlier about, you know, you going to Sears Point, right? Or Laguna, wherever it was, and you came in to dad. So it was one of those nice, Joe had a shop with a dyno. He was always working on the motors. And he had the guys working on the cars, but he's always working on the motors and always the motor the last minute, always in there in the dyno just working that motor. And the car got finished at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and it had to leave. We had literally the truck in the parking lot, the ramps down. It was an open trailer. We were pulling it with a Dodge Dually with a gas engine that Chrysler gave us, and it would go 250 miles on our tank of gas. That's what it would do, and we had a flatbed trailer with a car cover. Remember that? And the car's out in the park, the thing's out in the parking lot. So Joe finally gets it done. We threw the motor in the car, buttoned it up, boom, on the trailer. I get in the thing, and I got to take it to Sears Point. I got to take it to Sonoma. And so I drive over to my parents' house. I'm staying in, and my dad had a bathroom in the garage. And I got the truck sitting out in the end of the driveway, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning now. We've been up all night. And he comes out, and I'm taking a shower, and he says, son, where are you going? I said, Sears Point. He said, when are you leaving? I said, now. The truck was sitting there idling with the lights on. I said, as soon as I can get a shower and throw some things, I got to go. And I had this kid with me. Remember the kid? It was a young kid. And I just remember telling that kid, no matter what, we're going, we have to go. And, you know, we would pull into a gas station, get fuel, and just keep going. Under no circumstances was this truck going to stop, ever once. So hook or crook, we got that car across the country and literally pulled in to the track. Remember that, Joe? We pulled in, I want to say I pulled in 11 o'clock in the morning or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah, we unloaded it, went to qualifying or something.
Yeah, we pulled it in, literally pulled into the track. We pulled the ramps down, pulled the car cover off the car. Joe was there in his driver's suit, standing there in his driver's suit, waiting for the car. Jumps up on the trailer, gets in the car, fires it up, brings it off the trailer, and drove it straight down onto the track, qualified the car. Boom. That's how last minute we were. I mean, for that particular race, I mean, you know. And maybe that was the race. I think that was the race, Dave, you were talking about. I think. Maybe not. I'm not sure. But I don't know if we won. I can't remember if we won that one or not, you know, Joe, you know, in that Dodge.
Oh, that is
But,
yeah, I don't remember if we won that race.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't think we did. We shouldn't have,
yeah.
But we did.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy how we did stuff back in those days. We just did it. You know, we just did it. It just happened. I mean, it just, you know. So, anyway, cool story.
What did y'all do for fun between times?
Oh, geez.
We
had a lot of fun.
I mean, all we did was race. We didn't do anything but race and worked on race cars and.
Yeah, we didn't have time to do anything else. No, you're right. That was complete true. We didn't have time to do anything else. We just.
And you didn't have an off season.
No.
No, nobody does.
No, we didn't.
No, we raced all the time. I mean, we had, you know, but you know what? I will say, we had fun doing it. I mean, we worked really hard. We were young. We were fired up. We just did it. And. We racing was fun in those years. I mean, Camel GT, RJ Reynolds would have big functions. I remember, you know, racing at Riverside. Remember, we would go to that place and everyone would show up, all the teams. Dave, you were there. All the teams would show up, and it was just always fun. And we'd party late at night and be at the track the next day.
Yeah.
Way past our bedtime now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you start thinking about it. And I mean, it just kind of goes on and on. I mean, the stories and the times, it goes on and on. So Joey and I drove together we drove with each other, against each other. We were on the teams together. We drove in GTU. We drove in GTO. Champion, all through the years. So, my very first Camel GT win was with Joe. We won the Lumberman's 500 at Mid-Ohio. That was my first Camel. I won 23 Camel GT races. And the first one was with Joe. We won the Lumberman's 500 at Mid-Ohio and in a Mazda RX-7. And then the second one, we won Sears Point. We won that one. And the competition was tough. It was Gurney.
Oh, yeah.
It was
yeah.
Gurney. And Joey would go out there, and Joey would put it on the pole. He was fast. He'd put it on the pole, and he would lead. And then he'd come in and give me the car. And we typically had a good lead. And I could run about his pace, and I'd just keep the pace, and we'd win. The car was pretty reliable. If the car didn't break, we would typically win. So we won those two races. And we had some other, you know, crashes and stuff, like, you know, little fires and things. But those are my first two wins in Camel GT. That was kind of cool.
Neato.
Yeah.
But you did get off into, well, you said you were doing SCCA and this and that earlier on. But did you like IMSA better?
IMSA better than what?
SECA.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was professional. You know, I mean, I was one of the very first members of IMSA ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember getting a call at my parents' house, and they said, we hear you have a Cortina. And I go, yeah. And they said, well, we're trying to start this new organization. It's called IMSA, International Motorsports Association. Could you bring your car to Daytona? We want to kind of do a little race. And I was like,
a little.
Yeah. And it was just, well, it was just the beginning. It was just it was just a concept. And I remember I went over there and I asked him, I said, well, if you can give me some gas money. So they said, so I don't know. They gave me $20 or something like that. I don't know. Gas was cheap. And I don't think the race happened. Not enough people showed up because I went up over to the tower, I mean, to the tunnel. And but that was kind of the beginning right there of IMSA. I mean, I remember my number still is. It's 888. You know, my number on my license. So, Joe's, yours is low. What's your number?
You know, Jack, I don't remember what it is, but it's like 12 something or 13 something.
Yeah, it's low. It's low, you know? Really low numbers. I mean, now if you look at somebody's number, it's like thousands. So, you know, and John and Peggy Bishop, I mean, and actually in the beginning, I ran Formula Fords in IMSA. They had they call it I-100s. And we raced. We had one Formula Ford race at Daytona, and in fact, a guy got killed there. A guy from Tampa got killed there in one of the races. But we had a race there, and they wanted to try it on the oval, you know, mm-hmm. And it was crazy. I mean, nobody died, but it was crazy. And I think Bill France saw that and said that this will never happen again because. You know, we were.
I've heard about that particular incident.
Yeah, and I've got the list of that race. I mean, somewhere in all my stuff, I've got the entry list. And when I stumble on it from time to time, and you read the names, it's unbelievable who was in that race, that Formula Ford race. And so anyway, that was the beginning of IMSA. It was John and Peggy Bishop, and that's what we did. It was kind of cool. And I remember VIR. We ran Formula Fords at VIR. I ran VIR in 1974, something like that. Ran the first slicks that were ever run, Goodyear slicks, on a Formula Ford. Yep, yeah. They caught. We were there, and a guy comes up. And he says, "I've been looking for somebody that'll run these new tires we have. Would you be interested?" Of course, I was going around buying used tires. I'd go around and, you know, guys that have tires, if I couldn't see through the tire, I'd buy, you know, I'd say, "Can I have that tire?" And they go, "Yeah, we'll throw it away." I'd say, "Good, I'll put it on a car," you know. So I've got pictures of me with, you know, three different brands of tires on the car because I couldn't afford tires. And so now I had a tire deal, Goodyear. And they were slicks.
You kept them all the time, didn't you?
Those were the first slicks, you know?
Wow.
And that ever were ran right there. And we ran them at Mid-Ohio. The sidewalls kept blowing out. I remember I told them, I said, "I hope you get these tires fixed before you kill me." And And Goodyear stayed with me all through the years. And really, I probably couldn't have had the career that I had without Goodyear because they gave me tires. All through those years.
I think there's quite a few people that can say that.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing when you look back on it. Wow.
So, yeah, I remember we were running with Joe. I'd go over. Remember, Joe, when they used to grind the tires, right? They'd go, mm-hmm. and they'd have the big truck over there. And the first thing we would do is go in there, and the guys would let me go in the truck. And I'd start going through tires, and we'd start picking out tires. And get our tires picked out and marked before anybody else. Because there was a difference in the tires, the way they ground them. And you wanted one that was ground, like, a lot. So it was almost like a slick. And you just sort of, you know, you start looking at tires. You know, and every 10 or 12 tires or 20 tires, you go, All right, here's a good one. Set that over to the side. So we always handpicked our tires. Nobody knew it. I mean, there was nothing illegal about it. You just had to get up early in the morning, get over there, and get it done. You know, Goodyear didn't care. Of course, we didn't tell anybody. We were pretty quiet about it.
Well, you really weren't the only one doing that, but, you know, you had a system that nobody, you know, it was better.
Well, we got there first. I can tell you that. Nobody got there before I did.
That's right.
So, anyway, kind of goes on and on.
Yeah. So, who's got a question? Anybody in the audience? Crickets. Anybody?
License number 813. The race you're talking about there, buddy, was in 71, was that first IMSA Formula Ford race at VIR, for what it's worth.
Is that when it was? Yeah.
Yep, it was 71.
Hold it.
That was when one of them went off down to the cornfield cartwheeling like a buzzsaw right in down, out of sight. I would think you would remember that.
I remember going off at the cornfield. That was that a Formula Ford race or was that the Camel GT race?
No, that was a Formula Ford race.
That was a Formula Ford race, right. I was there. I don't think I know I did other Formula Ford races at Mid-Ohio or at VIR, but the race I was referring to was the Campbell GT race because I know Peter Gregg was there in Greenwood and we were there. I was there with my teammate Bill Harris, and then I was there with other, you know, I think I drove Joe Armbruster's car there. I'm not sure, but anyway. Might have been later than 71, but track's still amazing. Same configuration, nothing's changed. It's just gotten nicer. And the corn, there's no more cornfields. Hello?
I'm still here.
Hey, I'm having a little bit of dog difficulty here, and she's tripping out, so I was on mute. Sorry I missed that. I was listening, but nobody wants to listen to my dog.
Joe, tell them the story about the speed record down Daytona in the sand with the Dodge.
After Dodge built that Charger, they decided to build a car called the Daytona, and we were doing this PR thing, and they had me run down the beach. They were trying to reenact the beach run, the beach speed run. So we went all the way down the beach, and they closed the beach down, and we had Mr. France rode in the car with me for. I made one pass with him in the car, just nice and easy, and then we went, and I don't know how fast we went, but it was kind of funny because they had two pickup trucks with a banner, and I was supposed to drive under this banner, and it said Dodge Daytona, and there was a helicopter, and they were following us and doing videos and stuff for PR thing, right, to introduce the car. When I started going down the beach and I looked at these two trucks that had this banner run across them, you know, and about a quarter mile away, you look at it, it looked like a toothpick. And and this thing's in the sand, right? And it's just sliding all over the place. And I'm just flat footing it through there. And I said, man, I hope I don't hit one of those trucks. And I got through there and everything was fine.
Yeah, it doesn't go straight. It kind of wanders back and forth.
Yeah, going over the dunes.
And then so remember that day we took the cars over to the speedway, the first front wheel drive car to ever go around the speedway was your Dodge. Remember?
Yeah.
the front-wheel drive car, because they wanted to see back in the front-wheel drive world, you know, everything they thought, everything was going front-wheel drive. Chrysler, everything Chrysler made was front-wheel drive. So NASCAR thought, well, shoot, this could be the beginning of the, you know, everything's going to go front-wheel drive, and we need to know what happens if a, you know, a front-wheel, we've never taken a front-wheel drive around the speedway. And so remember we took the cars over there, and Goodyear was there, and France was there, and all these, John Cooper was there, I remember that morning. And I remember you were talking to him, you were over there talking to him, you know, and doing all this stuff. And
yeah, Schaefer was there.
Schaefer was there and all this stuff. And I remember you said, he said, so you're going to go, they said, so what's going to happen here? And all of a sudden I'm standing about 10 feet away because you're over there talking to all the, you know, all the, getting this whole thing together. And you said, you know, because nobody knew what was going to happen. And, you said, so what we're going to do is Jack's going to take the car. He's going to take the car and he's going to go. Do it. And I was like, I'm going to do it. Yeah, you're going to do it. I said, okay. So that was it. We went around, and it was some, you know, nobody knew. I remember I got way up there by the wall and way up at the top because I figured, man, if something blows, I'll just be close to the wall like Richard Petty does. And it went around pretty good, though. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we didn't have no problem.
No, we didn't. It was just hold it wide, the car steady as a rock, went right around there, you know? However fast that thing would go, I don't know how fast it would go. You probably know, but it's pretty fast. We had it wound up.
Yeah, I bet you went 140 or something, 145.
Yeah, yeah. It was
it was pretty fast.
And I remember I was like, man, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm going to get right up to close the wall up there. And I got right up at the top, and I'm going around. And I was like, okay, this is cool. So anyway, there's a little trivia. Who's the first guy at ever ground to Daytona? It's Jack Baldwin and Joe Vardy's Dodge. It's Shelby Daytona Dodge Charger. And
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, just a little something, you know.
Well, with that happy note, I guess we need to wrap it up here. Got any last words to say?
You know, I would say, you know, it's been, for me, I would say on a personal level that, you know, Joe is, he's definitely one of the best friends I've got and one of the best guys I've ever known, one of the smartest guys, the guys, I respect him tremendously for what he's done and the kind of person he is, and it's an honor to call him a friend, and I'm glad I got to do this with him, you know, I look forward to many, many more years of creating fun stories and years of friendship.
I'd like to have y'all back one of these days, so
sure,
keep that in your mind. Joe, how's it going over there? Did you have fun?
Yeah, that was great. It was good walking down memory lane there. It's getting a little, you know, all the stories, you know, you think back and you go, oh, that's right. Yeah, that's all that. I remember that. But me and Jack had a real good time, and we did a lot of things together and accomplished a lot of stuff, so I'm pretty proud to call him my friend.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you, getting ready for this, and of course I enjoyed seeing you on the track back from the 80s onward. And I remember y'all, and of course you remember me, but I was just one of those ubiquitous persons wandering around with a clipboard, and that was about it. But that meant a lot to me to know that we would have you on tonight, and it's been fun, and I've enjoyed it. Folks, it's hotter than heck everywhere, so we're going to take a break for the rest of the summer. We'll take the summer off, the end of this month anyway. Stay tuned for our new longer monthly format in September. We're going to have once a month, longer, maybe a couple hours, with more roundtable discussions with lots and lots of crazy people that, you know, we're just trying to figure out who's who and when they're talking. And expecting to have some really good times. I know we've got one planned for November that's going to be a rock'em sock'em. So do not give up on us. I just wish everybody a really nice remainder of the summer. Take care of yourselves. Don't get overheated. And get some time off if you can. How about y'all? Are you going to get any time off?
No, I don't think we have time off. I think we end up in November, and then we start testing in December again. So not much time off.
Yeah, same with me. I mean, we're the series is growing, and you know, but I'll any spare time I get, I ride my dirt bike, you know. So.
Yeah, where are you going next?
Next, we're going to Tennessee. We're going to run up in the mountains of Tennessee. So
stay off the Blue Ridge Parkway.
No, we don't ride in the asphalt. It's all single-track off-road.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
No. Yep.
Just be careful. Don't bump your head.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and do y'all see you at the track or somewhere? We talk all the time. So, you take care. And thanks for letting me be a part of it tonight.
It's been wonderful. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, Dave, thank you very much.
Yeah, Dave, thanks.
Stay in touch.